Welcome to Books That Built Me, where we dive deep into the pages of meaningful books to uncover valuable insights and lessons. Today, we are spicing things up with some hot takes, which are my personal reflections and opinions of some of the lessons from some of the books that have built me have to offer. The genesis of this is that I often get asked by my personal guests about what my opinions on the books that have built me are, what are my recommendations. And so I thought it would be fun to dive into the universe of books that have built me and some of the lessons that have shaped my life. I've got to say, books are very personal. It depends on where you are when you picked up a book, what frame of mind you were in, what you were thinking about when you read it. And so my hot takes is going to be a personal reflection and a personal opinion from the moment that I read it, which may not be in the current space that I'm in. However, I do hope that it sparks some creativity within you and you get some insight out of it. The book that we are talking about today is called Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell. I am a longtime Gladwell fan. My first book that I read was Blink, The Power of Thinking Without Thinking. I found it on the bookshelf of a 10-year-old who, with great enthusiasm, gave it to me to read and insisted that I take it home to finish. Boy, am I grateful, because now I read everything that he publishes. Malcolm Gladwell is one fascinating figure. He's known for his thought-provoking books and articles that delve into a wide range of topics, often blending sociology, psychology, and economics. Okay, without further ado, let's dive in. Okay, we're talking about Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell is one of my favorite authors, and this book I have read two times now. The first time was very, very interesting, and I wanted to go back a second time to take more notes and highlight more of the lessons and really think about it in a deeper way. I wanted to record a podcast on this book in particular because this is one of those books that can be just so interesting to read because there's so many historically interesting case studies brought forward by Gladwell. And so it's just the interest level from a historical point of view is high. But then I think as well, the bottom line for what it means for every day you and me going about interactions with strangers is also fascinating, right? I don't think there's like one major conclusion from this book, which is also what makes this book an interesting read, because I really had to think about so what does this mean? And so in this episode, I'm going to give you my so what, and hopefully that, you know, resonates with you and it maybe inspires you to pick up a copy of this book. I don't know. The historical elements, though, just so you know, we're talking about, you know, Bernie Madoff, Amanda Knox's case, Sylvia Plath. There are some other studies here of Sandra Bland, Fidel Castro, Neville Chamberlain, the Queen of Cuba, the spy that worked at the CIA, Larry Nassar, like all very, very interesting, historically significant stories that make its way into, in some way, shape, or form, conversing with strangers and why it can work and when it goes devastatingly bad. So there's two ideas that I would love to share with you guys. The first one is Malcolm Gladwell has coined default to truth, where he says that our operating assumption is that people we are dealing with are always honest. When we meet a stranger, we default to truth. We assume that they are 100% honest. And we don't behave like scientists in that way. We don't slowly gather evidence before we reach a conclusion. Instead, we start by giving them 100%. We start by believing 100% that they are honest, truthful human beings. And we only stop with that belief when our doubts rise to a point where we can't explain them away. That's such an important distinction, because if somebody is acting in a way that feels odd or your spidey senses are tingling, if there is a reason for why they're feeling or why they're behaving that way, or at least if you can conjure up a reason, then you're not breaking that threshold. You know, you're not going past that point where you can explain why they're acting in that way. Case in point, you know, one of the examples that they shared was the Queen of Cuba, Ana Montes, who was a Cuban spy who worked in the CIA. When she was caught, everyone said, oh my God, the signs are so obvious. It's so clear that she had some red flags. But whilst it was ongoing, people just said that her behavior was strange, or that she was just a bit odd. Like, she was a bit of an oddball, taking a certain phone call in a certain meeting or talking in a certain way. Like, she was just a weird character. And so they were explaining away some of her behavioral elements. So anyway, default to truth. You believe in somebody 100%, and you only stop when your doubts rise to a point where they can't be explained away. And it's interesting because belief in somebody, their honesty, belief is not the absence of doubt. You are continuing to believe somebody because you don't have enough doubt about them. Yeah, that's a game-changing idea, right? Defaulted truth is believing somebody because you don't have enough doubt about them. And that's how we lead our lives every day. Like, our operating assumption is that everybody is honest, just as honest as we are. And we see that naturally by default. The second idea that I thought was very interesting and something that sat with me for a while is this notion of transparency. So transparency is the idea that people's behavior and their way of being, like their demeanor, the way they represent themselves on the outside, provides this authentic and reliable window into the way they feel on the inside. And this is one of the second tools that we use to make sense of strangers. The first one being, you know, we default to truth. We assume that they're 100% honest. And then the second tool that we use is the way they act and the way they behave. That represents what happens on the inside. And so when we don't know somebody or can't communicate with them or don't have the time to understand them properly, we believe that we can make sense of them through their behavior and their, you know, the way that they act. And so there's this idea, and it starts with childhood, right? Like, children just smile when they're happy. They frown when they're sad. They giggle when they're amused. And because it's so simple, the argument here is that the face is a billboard for the heart. Whatever you're feeling in your heart region shows up on your face. And so what happens with that is, you know, there's in the book, they talk about the friend's fallacy. I don't know if he exactly calls it that, but the idea here is that in the show Friends, you'll know when Joey is sad. You'll know when Chandler is being funny. You'll know when Ross is angry. It's because the way they act, it directly represents how we think anger, you know, frustration, funniness shows up on the face. And so there's this notion that the world is like Friends, that we see the world like a sitcom, that when you think somebody is going to be funny, their face needs to be a certain way. Otherwise, something's wrong with them. So this concept of transparency, where we assume that what's happening on the inside of our hearts is translated on our face, is a fallacy. It doesn't really land that way in reality. Everyone can have a different output to the same emotion. Like, two sad people can act completely differently. So an example of this notion that we judge based on other people's facial expressions and behaviors, there was this awesome study in the book where defendants were, quote unquote, you know, released while awaiting a trial. And there were a certain number that were released by human judges and a certain number released by an AI system algorithm that tracked, you know, everything apart from that initial human intuition, so to speak. And it was interesting because of the list of the people who were released by the AI system, that list was 25% less likely to commit a crime while awaiting trial. And so the bottom line for me from this study and from this point generally is that judgment of others should have nothing to do with your feelings, right? It should have nothing to do with feelings, but we make that a reality often. And there's this, you know, other part of the book where he talks about being lie detectors. And you can tell generally when someone is lying, you know, there's this obvious, they, you know, their throat is dry. So they take another, they take another like gulp, or they look around, they're a bit fidgety. And, you know, all these like typical things that they say when someone is lying, this is what you watch out for. But they say that for the whole thing about lying is that Malcolm Gladwell says that we are naturally bad at telling, at detecting lies, mostly in situations where the person that we're judging currently is mismatched, i.e. like if you think that they should be acting in a certain way and then their outwardly response or behavior is not in keeping with what you think, that's what mismatched means. And so your lie detector in those situations is not going to work well. A good example of this was the Amanda Knox case, if you're familiar with that, where she was accused of murdering her roommate whilst traveling overseas. And the reason that she was accused and held for a very long time was that everybody thought that she was guilty, and it was obvious that she was guilty because her outwardly reactions were not in keeping with remorse or the sadness that comes after the death of a friend. And so her behavior in particular was read into, and it was parsed to the nth degree. And I think basically the bottom line was anyone who has had a friend pass away would not act in the way that she did. And of course, all of this was wrong, right? She was not the murderer. Her name was cleared. But it took a very long time for her to prove her innocence. And again, it goes back to this whole thing about two sad people can have completely different outward reactions and their expressions and their way of being. So those are the two main ideas that I took away from this book. And all to say, like, bringing it back together, the thing that is, you know, at the essence of all of this is that getting to know what strangers are like, or learning about strangers, that in itself is a very fragile process. You have to tread on it carefully. You know, you do need to accept that searching another human, or you're searching another human for an idea or understanding or awareness, it really has limits. We will truly never know the whole truth. And we have to be satisfied with something short of that. You have to be satisfied with something less than that. So I think for me, the bottom line for this entire book is that the right way to be with strangers and the right way to talk to strangers. And so I think the bottom line for me with this book is that the right way to talk to strangers or be with strangers is with caution and humility. And there are a lot of controversies and crises that have been described in the book that could have been prevented. And so part of this whole thing is you don't want to be too trusting. You don't want to be too trusting. And the alternative, which is to abandon your trust completely, is worse than that, right? So there's almost, you've got to look for a balance. There's a fine balance between how you conduct yourself, what it takes to really understand another human. Not to say that you'll know now exactly how to talk to strangers after reading this book, but for me, I just even think that knowing the two bottom lines, the two truths that I was saying, knowing that our default to trust somebody, fully is like his first point, that we have a default to truth, knowing that that's how we are psychologically built, that in itself is empowering. Because now that you know that, you can observe it more. You know, and not to say that now you have to go be cautious and suspicious about every interaction, but it's also very informative to know that we default to looking for emotion that is characteristically childlike, or, you know, the friend sitcom comment about how it's just so obvious what they're feeling because it's so expressively clear in the way that they present themselves. You know, humor is this massive smile on your face. Sadness is a frown. That is an outdated way of thinking about how we present with emotions. So overall, I think the bottom line is pause, be cautious, have humility, because you will never know the full story, and you should never pretend to even be close to that reality. There is a fraction of the world's truth that you are familiar with, and everything else is foreign. So take that as a grain of salt as you approach conversations with people. And I think that's the ultimate, you know, bottom line here. And that's it. That was my hot take on Talking to Strangers with Malcolm Gladwell. Such a great book. I really loved reading it the first time. I loved reading it the second time. I think it's a fascinating model of telling a story through historical case studies. I just love how he makes it so real and it's just so tangible. And for that reason alone, I would highly recommend this book. That's it. See you at the next hot take.